seminar. We have the topic of accessibility using the internet, and we are lucky to have three eminent speakers today. First, we'll introduce Lisa Harvey. She has worked with and for non-profit organization for over 20 years. We are lucky to have her here to share her experiences with us. She started Energetica, a purpose-driven business working with non-profit organizations and community sector organizations to help them engage with their communities online. So I'll ask Lisa to come over and to talk about implications of government too for accessibility. Welcome to us. Thank you. Hi everyone. A bunch of smiling faces, that's what I like to see. I have about 20 minutes, I'm told, on a subject on which I could talk for considerably longer, so I'm hoping that the bell will ring when I run out of time. I have a few slides, nothing particularly special, so we don't have to worry particularly much about those. In the last 6 months of last year, I was a participant on the Government 2.0 Task Force, which was commissioned by Lindsay Tanner, the Minister for Finance and Deregulation, and Joe Ludwig, the Special Minister of State. 15 people participated, chaired by Nicholas Druin, who is an economist and a blogger and an all-round good guy. And we were commissioned with the task of determining how government can use technology in engaging with the community and with providing access to data. So they were essentially our two terms of reference. How can the government engage with communities online? And what does it mean for government in providing access to the information stores that they have? We consulted widely, we blogged and we researched and we asked a lot of questions and we interviewed a lot of people. And we talked and talked and talked until we were going slightly crazy, I think. And then we had to spend a lot of time writing, and we wrote our report, which you will find on the website. It was released in December, and the website is www.gov2.net.au. I have that URL at the end of the presentation, so you don't need to write it down now. We also ran a bunch of competitions, which were a lot of fun. One of them was the MASHES, which was the idea was how can we get people to use different parts of government information, put them all together and mash them up, as it's known in geek terminology, to mash them up and provide services for people. And mashing up is one of the things that government information is very useful for. So, for example, we talked with Andrew regarding some of the ideas around how we can get diversity information along with geographic information and some other census data and present those in ways that that can be useful for communities in making decisions, for communities in looking at their own profile, for community service organisations to make decisions about how they provide their services, and for government, of course, in how they provide funding for services and things like that. So there's a lot of really interesting ways of mashing up information. I want to talk today a little bit about our two terms of reference, and then I'll get on to specifically the accessibility. Our terms of reference, the first one was online engagement. So how do governments use online tools to engage with the community? To listen to community opinions, to get community talking to each other, and to really find ways for the community to have input into policy development. That's at the root of it. This is what for many of us on the task force, this was really our passion. How can we get the government to hear the community using technology? How can we get the government to listen to what people are saying, and for that voice to be heard in policy development? Online tools such as Twitter and Facebook and all of those social media tools and a bunch of new technologies are obvious ways in which government can do that. They are freely available to the community and to government, so in fact if community wants a voice, they don't necessarily need to wait till government asks for it. But it's also a matter of how government asks those questions of the community and what technologies they use and the problems associated with that. A number of barriers to this presented themselves, and they were mostly around the culture of the public service. How do public servants speak online? How do they speak publicly? How do they speak in the name of the government? How do they speak without losing their jobs? And these were real questions that were raised. We spoke with people who had been threatened with losing their jobs simply because they had made statements online, not necessarily controversial or overly critical of anything, but simply because they had made statements online. So public servants speaking publicly is a real barrier to the way that governments can use online tools. There is also within the public service a great deal of misunderstanding or misinformation or simply lack of information about how and why these sort of tools should be used. I think one of the statistics that came out is that the average age of public service is about 45. Now, that's not a terrible thing for those of us who are 45. However, it is an indication that perhaps the Facebook and the Twitter and the MySpace are not parts of the vernacular that the public service uses in their everyday existence. Were the average age something like 28, perhaps that might change. And it will change, but if we wait for a generational change, then there'll be something new that will come along. And all of those who are now 28 and will be 45 will be saying, what on earth is all this new technology? So there's those kind of barriers, lack of skills and resources. Lack of permission is certainly one of the issues that was very clear to us. We asked public servants for submissions about how they would use information online and engage with the community. We know that there were a number of public servants, senior public servants, who wanted to make submissions, and those submissions were either completely gutted by their superiors or their superiors said, no, you can't make a submission at all. And this was very disturbing to us because obviously, we were there to find out the information of the public servants, the kinds of things that they were experiencing in engaging people online and in releasing information. Privacy, of course, is another requirement, and that's a legislative compliance requirement, as is record keeping. One of the issues that the task force had was that we were using an online system for our own internal communication. It wasn't an internal government system because half the task force were not government people. So we used a free service. Actually, it wasn't quite free, but you can get a free version of it, called Basecamp. But the servers for those are located overseas, and that, in a sense, is in a very real way, in fact, is a breach of the record keeping requirements for government. So we had to take measures to respond to that. Since we had the head of the National Archives on our team, we were able to resolve that issue. And it's simply a matter of just knowing that that's an issue and making the right decisions about it. Of course, if we were storing personal information, that would be a whole other thing, because putting that information overseas is in fact a breach of the privacy laws. And accessibility, of course, is another barrier, and I'll talk in detail about that because that's why we're here. But there are many opportunities. I've got a couple of examples of some of the opportunities here. If this is going to click, let's try that. Hello. There we go, online engagement. This is a really timely one. This is actually Eurocontrol Twitter. Eurocontrol are the people that shut down the airspace in Europe. And this has been fantastic. Essentially, what people are able to do is to send a Twitter question, and this guy sits there, 18 hours a day, and answers people's Twitter questions. So it's brilliant, and he's been really friendly. I assume it's a he. That's a bit of an assumption I shouldn't make. But the responses have been really friendly, and you can see from one of them there, I think the last one at the top says, I'm going to go and have sleep now, and so I'll be back later. So these are the kinds of information exchanges that can happen between government agencies and the rest of the world in a crisis. And this is the really useful tool that government agencies can use. Because if you're sitting at an airport with your iPhone and you just want to know when the airspace is going to be open and these guys are going to answer your question, it's going to make you feel a whole lot better, even if the answer is not yet. although as I hear, it is happening, which is lucky for some. This is Mosman Council, which is a little closer to home. They have a very active Twitter site where they are providing information about their community to people. They'll answer questions, they'll talk about events. So the one at the bottom there says the first game of the season at Allan Border Oval for Mosman Football Club, who take on Colorado Chroma Strikers at 3 p.m. if you want to go. There's a URL so you can rock up. So there's this is kind of getting information out to the community, and it's a really effective way of doing that. And for organisations like local council, it's an extremely cheap way of simply communicating. And when people are communicated with, they feel a whole lot better about their communities. Okay, let's look at access to data for a brief moment. Access to data is all about the enormous collection of really useful and very exciting information that the government has. And being able as taxpayers and citizens to be able to access that information, because it is a public asset and it has enormous value to our community. There are a bunch of barriers to it, and a lot of those are also around the culture of the public service. The question is often asked, what are people going to do with my data if I give it to them? They are going to misuse it and mistreat it and make it say things that I don't want them to make it say. There's a lack of trust in the community and how the community will use information. And, you know, that may be the case, but the community is not going to learn how to use statistical information properly unless they're given the opportunity. There's a lot of, but my data's not good enough, it's not up to date enough, it's going to show how bad I am at maintaining it, and it's not very well presented. There are technology issues around it as well, so how is it presented in a way that people can actually use it? Our little motto that we came up with was it had to be findable, shareable and usable. So I needed to be able, if I'm a community member and I'm looking for some government information, I need to be able to find it. It needs to be able to be shared in a way that I can then use it, and it needs to be usable by systems, not just human brains. It needs to be also used by computer systems, so it needs to be in formats that computers can understand. And if it's all of those three, then it becomes a useful asset for the community. Let me just give you a couple of examples. I'm whizzing through all of this because I don't have much time. This is, I know this is all very tiny, but it is a screenshot from the Australian Bureau of Statistics Census online page. This is for Oatley, which is where I live. And it tells you some stuff about how many people live there, how many people are male, how many people are female, what age groups they are, and various other bits and pieces, including the total for Australia in the second last column over there as well. The census information is a huge resource. It's a very expensive resource for the government to produce, and they provide it in a way that it is, in fact, very, very useful for community organisations to use. Of course, you don't get everything, and you don't get it cross-referenced with other sets of data, but it provides a very useful format. And it's also provided under a Creative Commons licence, which means that you are entitled to use it. You don't have to ask their permission in any way. You simply have to acknowledge that it is ABS data, and you can do whatever you like with it, and you can download it all off their website. So that's a really, really good way that government can provide information. Of course, there are lots and lots of data sets other than the census that that will provide a lot more information that can be mashed up with other things. I think I've got another example. This uses some of the census data. This is about New South Wales, which is a project of the Powerhouse Museum. And you can look up your suburb, and it'll have a lot of information that's drawn from various sources, including information and photographs from the archives of the Powerhouse Museum. I couldn't find it, one with a nice picture. So you get Oatley again, which is not that exciting. And as I said, the task force had a focus on permissive licensing, such as Creative Commons. So being able to say, here's my information, you have permission to use it under these conditions, and the conditions are not that you have to ask me and I have to give you permission, the permission is there, but you may use it, you may redistribute it, you must acknowledge that I have it, that it is, was created by me. You may mash it up with other things and do all sorts of things with it, and various variations on that. I don't have time to go through Creative Commons at the moment. It's a very exciting development, and I think that you'll see a lot more of that from government ongoing. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the recommendations themselves and accessibility. The two terms of reference that we had, accessibility was on the agenda, and it certainly wasn't forgotten. It wasn't what the task force was all about, but I wanted particularly to make sure that it was on the agenda and maintained an important place. So in doing that, in making those statements, of course, they gave me the job of looking after it, didn't they? My big mouth, and that's what happens. It's something that I knew a little bit about. It's something that I care about, so I didn't mind so much. My approach was really one of making sure that it was that the results and the recommendations were pragmatic, that they were actually something that government could make use of, that they were inclusive and not accessibility just for people with vision impairments, which is sometimes how people approach accessibility, but certainly that it was accessibility for everyone who required accessibility. And that it was a long-term vision. I wanted something that would make culture change within the public service. That wasn't something that was just focused on compliance, that it was focused on culture change. And that's a very, very, very difficult thing to do in terms of creating some practical recommendations. So I don't know how successful we were, and I don't know what the result of the recommendations will be in terms of how they will be implemented or whether they will be implemented, but that was the intent. I really wanted to make people think. I wanted to make people do something other than say, I have to do accessibility because I have to. I have to comply because compliance is required. I want people to do accessibility because they believe it's the right thing to do, because they know that it is about making the lives of people better, because they are just making those decisions to implement systems that are accessible. So I wanted to make sure that the recommendations resulted in deliberate decisions about accessibility. And to do that, you can't say you will comply, because then people have no decisions to make. They just comply. I want people to think and therefore to be able to understand what the difference between making something accessible and making it not accessible is. So the pragmatic approach recognises that there are circumstances where compliance with accessibility, the requirements of that will have a negative impact on the provision of data or the communication or the online engagement. These are circumstances where, particularly where time is involved. And sometimes compliance with accessibility will mean that there is no access at all. And that's the thing I didn't want to happen out of these recommendations. It might be best if I just give you a couple of examples that I used. One example is new technology. I remember getting a presentation several years ago at a Connecting Up conference in Brisbane, and I gave people a demonstration of the JAWS screen reader technology on Facebook, and it was awful, absolutely awful, and I honestly don't know how Facebook got away with it for so long. I know it's considerably better now, but at the time, Facebook was simply unusable by assistive technologies, or screen reader technologies at least. So there are circumstances where you can't get around that. You have to rely on the Facebook people to do the work, and to do the work it takes an amount of time. So if an online engagement requires the use of something that the audience that you're trying to engage with is using a lot, such as Facebook or MySpace or Twitter, but the accessibility is not available, the decision that has to be made is, do we pressure these people and not do our accessibility now, and not do our online engagement now, or do we do our online engagement and pressure them and make some deliberate decisions about how we are engaging these people with the accessibility requirements. It's very difficult for me to explain because it's I know it's kind of controversial. It's something where I'm essentially saying that there are circumstances where accessibility won't be met in order to create an online engagement. And I'm not happy about that, but there are times where the technology doesn't meet the need in terms of accessibility, but it does meet the need in terms of online engagement. Obviously, the government is a powerful user, and they can influence these decisions that suppliers such as Facebook and MySpace, I probably think the Australian government is not quite as influential as we might like to think in those circumstances. But government certainly is a powerful user and can make. Do I need to finish? Okay, all right. Let me move on. So time is one of those things where accessibility can be a real issue and may result in reduced accessibility. What I wanted people to do is to be able to make a decision about that and make a deliberate decision. One of the other issues is user-generated content. If I'm doing a consultation, I'm a government agency doing a consultation, and I get a lot of submissions from the community, and a lot of those submissions are on inaccessible PDFs. What do I do with those? Do I send them back and say, well, make an accessible PDF, and they look at me and go, well, I don't even know what that means? Or do I say, we'll publish them anyway? So many people can access them, but not all people can access them. There may be circumstances where they can be translated into accessible formats, but often with a community consultation, there isn't the time or the resources to do that. And I know these are very difficult decisions to make, but if an agency is making them very deliberately and they're thinking about the implications of it, then I think that that is a very positive outcome. What I'd like to do then is just to simply look at the recommendations themselves. So the first recommendations we made were simply to comply. So comply with WCAG. Do what you need to do to comply with WCAG. And then when you can't, where there are circumstances where you can't, if it's user-generated content, if it's access to technology that is not already accessible, and there are no alternatives to that technology, seek advice from the Australian Government Information Office, and they are committing to providing that advice. And where you can't do it and you choose to proceed, then make an accessibility statement so that everyone who comes to your community engagement knows that you have actually made deliberate decisions about this, that you have thought about it, and that you have a plan of action in place that will have a time on it. So I'm going to say, I can't do it now, but over the next 6 months, I am going to make these changes in order to make that happen, which means the community consultation, for example, can proceed. However, it can, it will, you are really going to kick me out now, aren't you? Okay. And the second last, of course, is a register of those statements, so that there is a central place where all of us can go and look at those statements and then follow up on them. So it makes them publicly accountable for those decisions that they're making. And that, I thought, was a really important component, that people were making thoughtful and deliberate decisions about accessibility and that they were publicly accountable for those decisions. And then, of course, we wanted something positive at the end, so we're recommending that prizes be given for outstanding practice in accessibility. All right. And really, the reason for all of this is that accessibility is a human issue. It's not about technology, and it's not about data. It's about humans. It's about people, and that is really important. It's not something that is simply left to compliance. It really should be something people are thinking about. And that was the intent of all of that I have just talked about. Okay, I've given you two URLs there, www.energetica.com.au, which is my company website, which today down for maintenance, unfortunately. And www.gov2.net.au, on which you will find the Gov2 report with all of those things explained in probably more concise and bit more clarity than what I've given you today. So, thank you.
Lisa has mentioned about how we are actually, government too, is demanding more citizen-focused services because it is a human issue, and we are more focused on user-centered sort of design and usability and accessibility issues. She has also mentioned how government can engage the community online and how government can use the technology. She has nicely talked about mashing up, where we have seen that how people can use that mashing up or the repackaging of information and along with other information to obtain some specific information repackaged in a new way to discover some sort of new information. She has mentioned about the different type of barriers, like how and why the web tools can be used. That is one of the barriers, lack of skills and lack of resources, how this can be used and how it can be sorted. She had also mentioned about some recommendations where she mentioned about cultural change, which is important.